right. Hello again, and welcome to Keep It Close to Me, a podcast about the things we love and, you know, life and stuff. I'm Chris. I'm your host, podcast pal. And with me today is my good buddy, Matt Drain.
Hello.
And we're here today to talk about Into the Spider-Verse. Now, Matt and I got to go see this along with my friend Jake and my wife, April, and not Matt's son Thomas, who was pretty disappointed, I think.
Yeah, he gave me a dirty look.
We got to go see a sneak preview of it like a week early. So it still has not officially come out when we're recording this, but the odds are very good that by the time you hear this, it will have come out, which is also kind of fine because we're probably going to be spoiling a lot of it.
Right.
But yeah, so by the time you hear this, it'll probably be out. I wanted to
hopefully you've already seen it.
Yeah, hopefully you've already seen it, because good grief. First, let's just get this right out of, you know, right out of the gate. Let's get this out there. This movie is absolutely amazing, spectacular, sensational, web of, nice, like 2099. This movie is absolutely amazing. It's incredible. I think it is the best comic movie,
it's a pure love letter to comics, to finish.
Yeah. But it's also such an amazing, like, I guess I could go on for forever about what it looks like, which is absolutely incredible. And like all the different styles it has going on. It's like a love letter within that, it being a total love letter to comics. It's also it's like a love letter to comics on so many levels.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there has been the closest I could think of to being like, wow, that really kind of captures what comics are like, of how grand or how something comics can be, was Infinity War. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's like, yeah, big stuff happened in Avengers, but it was like Infinity War was just really, you've got so many characters and so much stuff going on in different places.
It depicted the scale of what a big comic event can be.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then Into the Spider-Verse felt like comics.
Yes.
In a way that no other movie has, whereas all these other movies are good adaptations of those characters, ideas, stories. This is just a more pure, I don't know, getting those ideas and imagery up on the screen and just a really brilliant way.
Now, this is funny. We said before we started recording, we were talking about how we wanted to talk about this episode, but this does have it does have that sort of drawback of when something is so, so good. sometimes it's hard to know like what to talk about, or like it's hard to have anything to say other than just, I'm going like, I'm just kind of amazed it exists. It's so good.
I have nothing critical to say about it at all. Nothing at all. I mean, I want more of it.
Yes.
But that's the best criticism.
If they could put one of these movies out, you know, once every 2 years, a Spider-Verse movie, I would be so excited, especially if it's like they let these same people handle it all. And
my sincere hope is that yeah, absolutely. Everybody goes to see it.
Yes.
That it makes $1 billion+.
If you like Spider-Man, if you like comic books, you have to see this movie.
Yeah.
April, who is not a fan
of animation.
Yeah. If you want to see some just incredible animation and someone really like push what all can be in a American animated movie. The way, April does not like animated stuff generally. Okay. I mean, she likes some stuff, but she's just not really, it's not what she's going to just put on. It's not what she's going to seek out. And as you know, when we came out of there, she was just her glowing review.
You didn't tell her it was animated going in either. Did you say they were going
to
see?
I think she, all she knew about it was, I think she knew it was animated because she knew that it wouldn't be a new live action one because we had just seen Homecoming, was not that long ago. Plus, Spider-Man was in Infinity War, which I'm sure we'll get into at some point. But she was just like, I can't believe how good that was.
Yeah.
That was so good. And I was like, yeah, see, I mean, you can't just write off animation because some of it is not what you are into. And she's like, nah, I think that was just good. I don't.
This is the exception.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what I hope people don't do. I hope people don't write it off as an animated feature. This one's for the kids. This one's not for me. I hope nobody does that because I think all ages absolutely going to.
I think this movie had more emotional maturity than the majority of live action.
Live action ones. Yeah,
I think it had more emotional maturity than the majority of live action superhero movies because there is stuff in there that is like, this is heavy, Doc. Like, yeah. I mean, but it's all handled with such a deft touch, you know, so perfectly that even when the parts are sad or scary, like the stuff that you might think would be hard for maybe for a little kid to deal with, Spider-Man gets you out of it too, you know, like he brings you back up out of it. And this movie is definitely an emotional roller coaster because it really does. It gives you so much. It really does try to get at so many of your emotions.
Right.
And it does it all so well.
Yeah, you're laughing the whole time, but then there's also some emotional cuts.
The danger always feels real.
Oh yeah,
like and the not just the like the physical danger, but I guess we could start kind of spoiling things, but I could also probably try to say some of this without spoiling it. But the emotional toll that some of the things that happen in the movie takes on Miles, I feel like you are there with him every step of that. Yeah. And you're just, and it's incredible how I'm going to run out of positive adjectives, man. It's like, it's so
good. I think that's a good way of putting it. Cause you are definitely in Miles's shoes. You see he's the perspective character for the story. Yes. Lots of Spider-Man are involved, but it's through his eyes. And then, man, even a big theme of the movie is anyone can be Spider-Man. You, audience member, could be Spider-Man, and so that, man, that's all tied up in just living that experience with Miles and experiencing the heights and the fun of it, and then also the moments that are scary for him and moments he's overwhelmed.
The part where, well, I won't spoil it, but I'll say the part when something bad has happened. I think we all know if you know Spider-Man, if you're a Spider-Man. Some bad stuff is going to happen to you. It's just kind of, it goes along. It's part of the job. And unfortunately for Miles, he learns that in the course of this adventure, not in the way that I expected him to though, which is, I mean, with not saying like outside of knowing sort of what happens in his life in the comics.
And you know, they have that moment where the other characters, other Spider-Men tell him.
That's what I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The part where they all kind of go, he's like, you guys don't understand. And they're like, actually, we are the only ones who do understand. Right. And then how they all have that. I think my favorite thing from this movie, and this is it's not really a spoiler because it's not important to the plot, but it was the part that like really, really resonated with me as I was like, that's perfect. Like you could just take that one part and I'd go like, man, as how wonderful, and I'm like, I feel like I'm honestly starting to get emotional thinking about it right now, is the first time that Miles meets Spider-Man and, you know, Spider-Man just saved him real quick and he has that thing. And then they have that little moment where they're both of their spider senses go off.
Right.
Like when, I guess it's like when they touch or something.
Yeah. I guess it's for the storytellers, it's a shortcut of a way that they can recognize each other without having to go into a big, whatever.
Expository.
Yeah.
Kind
info
of thing.
Dump. Yeah.
Yeah. An info dump. Expository is the English major way to say that.
But instead, yeah, both their spider senses go off. And
Pete just goes, oh, you're like me.
Yeah.
And then that they all have that moment. It's like it made me so much. It's like that all of them have felt like they were all alone in this. And then like, even though all these bad things have happened, then to find out that it's like, hey, you're like me. You're not alone in this. And that thing of, they talk about it in there, that thing of like how Spider-Man, you know, it's like the feeling like a misfit or feeling like you're not like everybody else. And then going like, hey, there's other people beyond. That's sort of like the meta textual thing of beyond the story of the movie is it's like, hey, everybody, we know that you feel like you're all alone sometimes, but you're not. There's other people out there like you who have been through the things you've been through. And it's that idea that you can keep going and it'll be okay. There's going to be ups and downs, but that's powerful stuff. And it's like, I think that's one of those things about Spider-Man. There's a reason why Spider-Man has resonated with so many people for so long. It's the reason why we've had, what is this now, like 9, 10 Spider-Man movies or something, like, or movies that Spider-Man was in. And it's still, people are, yeah, give me more. More Spider-Man. I love him. Like 3 Tobey Maguire ones, 2 Andrew Garfield, 1
Homecoming,
Civil War,
Infinity War.
That's 10 or 9. So can't remember.
Many.
And people still want, and cartoons. And, you know, like, he's had a cartoon. He's basically had a, there's only been a few years since the 60s where there weren't like Spider-Man shows.
And he's Marvel's flagship character.
And it's so weird that in the MCU, it's basically because just simply because they didn't have access to him, you know, that like Iron Man sort of became the MCU.
Right.
Like tentpole character.
And in the, you know, the 90s, particularly the late 90s, Wolverine was kind of also up there, but none of them like Spider-Man. None of them, I think, quite capture
all
those things you were talking about that, man, resonate with people of all ages like Spider-Man
does. And oh my gosh, speaking of resonate with people of all ages, this movie is incredible because it lets everyone have a character where it's like, oh, there's my Spider-Man. Right. There's the Spider-Man I can identify with, you know, because you've got the really young kid. You've got the first Spider-Man, who's the Spider-Man in Miles' world.
Right.
Boy, what are the odds? Now, okay, so we were out getting snacks for the movie and then there was no trailers or anything. So the movie started exactly on time, which we were not.
Right.
But we did try to get to the theater early since I had everybody's tickets. But did they explain at all what the deal with that spider was? Like why there was a spider that would
the one that bit Miles?
Yes.
No. When you saw him was the first time that they showed him. And I guess they just...
they're like, just go with it.
Yeah. I want to say they had like the Alchemex.
They had something. I remember seeing the Alchemex and I was like, oh, they must have explained this earlier.
Yeah. I think... I'm definitely watch the movie again, and I'm sure there's lots of stuff that I missed. But
well, it definitely came from the alternate realities experiments when Miles touches it, it glitches.
Right. So I think that maybe it is a regular spider that was caught in the when the super collider was doing its reality bending thing.
So it's a different take on the Spider-Man, but they don't show that
unless I blinked and
missed. We're definitely going to go see it again.
I'm going to see it again and. This movie is very fast-paced. It's totally possible I blinked and missed it.
The visuals in this movie are going to take, I think, you know, a decade to sort of unpack.
Right.
Because there is so much going on. There's so much visual information. And there were parts, they do these interesting things where it's like, they do stuff that you don't normally see in animated things, like rack focus and stuff where things in the foreground are like really out of focus. Or what you're not supposed to be paying attention to. Is out of, like, if they want you paying attention to Miles, he's the only thing.
Yeah, almost
in focus.
Like if you watch a 3D movie without the glasses on,
the
stuff kind of goes out of focus.
And there were parts where I was going, like, wait, is this me?
This way?
Are my eyes messing up? Or it's like, are they not projecting it right? Because you'd see stuff and it would seem like it was sort of out of focus or like split,
right?
Like 3D stuff. Speaking of, man, you want to talk about a movie I would love to see in 3D.
It'd be wild.
I don't know if they're doing it in 3D, but if they're not, it's dumb because they should. like all that stuff. And I was just going like, oh, wow, this is interesting choices they're making.
Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. It's intentional. So you focus on.
On what? Yeah. There would be parts where I was just like, what is that? Why is it? Oh, wait, Miles is in focus. No, it's okay.
Yeah.
This is what they want it to look like. But just. This is also the problem when something's really good is then you're just kind of like, once you get going and excited about thinking about it all again, then we're just like bouncing around.
In this part.
Remember when this happened? And I really don't, honestly, hopefully by the time you hear this, you will have seen the movie. Mm-hmm. But I also kind of want to say, don't let us rob any of the specialness, the magic of this movie from you. Go see this movie before you listen to this. Nothing we're going to say is going to be, I don't think anything we're going to say is not going to be pale in comparison to what it's like actually seeing it. So definitely see it first. Even though like, obviously we're going to say things that are like, this is what we like, this is great, blah, blah, blah. But man, yeah.
You're talking about everyone's got their kind of entry point character of all ages.
Thank you for bringing that back around.
No, well, because I thought that was a really good point. So with, you know, man, Miles's parents, you get the feeling of like, man, some of that, what's it like on the side of the parents for if you've got a kid superhero. You've got the, you know, the really successful Spider-Man, and then you've got the little bit, the more middle-aged, aging kind of stuff's falling apart on his life, Spider-Man. You've got Spider-Women and all different kind of Spider-Girls, all kinds of different characters coming in. I think that's neat. There's definitely something there for everybody. The movie handles representation really well. You talked about that deft touch, you know, when they're handling other cultures and, you know, Miles Morales, the character, you know, he's got a African-American father and a Hispanic mother. His life is a blend of those cultures. The movie nails it perfectly.
Yeah.
I love the times they kind of drop in bits of Spanish here and there. Man, that's exactly how it would be for that kid.
Yeah.
And so I thought that, man, all that was handled really well. You know, just a beautiful way to get this really great comic book character up on a big screen for everyone to see and appreciate. I wanted to ask, did you ever read the comic book miniseries Spider-Man 2?
No. I read Spider-Man 1, mm-hmm. and I only remember bits and pieces of it, other than I really enjoy... The main thing I took away from it was I was like, the two of them, Pete and Miles together, was great.
Right.
And I have Spider-Man 2, but I have not read it yet.
Yeah, so what's...
I was kind of like, I want to get this because I liked the first one, but I was not in a hurry to read it because I was kind of like, I really enjoyed the first one. Mm-hmm. So if this one's not as good, kind of don't want to.
So it's decent. It's not everyone must read this. But it also is decent. And like Spider-Man 1, it has some of those moments that are neat to see. But I brought it up only because the plot for Spider-Verse, Kingpin searching the multiverse for his wife and son, and that's straight out of that miniseries.
Oh, okay.
And so that was neat to see because it was kind of, as I was reading it, as the comic book was coming out, it's like, man, this is a really kind of random plot point. Like, what? And then to see, oh, I wonder if kind of Bendis knew that was the plot of the movie, so he was trying to get that into the comics first. I don't know. I don't know how all that comes together. Other than it takes a really long time for movies to be made. So
yeah,
and he probably some didn't movies. Have a hand. Well, that's true. He had a hand, I'm sure, in some of the development because I think he was a producer.
He was an executive producer, I believe. Correct, I mean, for now, who knows how involved he actually was? Sure. I think that's one of those things when you definitely created and steered this character for so long that it's like, yeah, they have to. Like they kind of have to call you an executive producer.
Right.
Because I think Sarah Pacelli had a executive producer credit on there as well.
Right.
And this is the kind of minutiae you really come to the show for, I'm sure. Who got EP credits on?
So all that to say, that was a plot point of that miniseries that got blown up to a much bigger, like the plot point of the movie. I mean, that's what brings all the Spider-Men together is the Kingpin search
of the multiverse. Just speaking of like how it brings them together and how it's just such a random thing that they get brought together and all this, but I love that the where this leaves everything is you could do one of these movies. You could do a bunch of these movies,
right?
And they don't have to have any of the same characters in any of them. I mean, you'd kind of be dumb not to after how I hope this does like so insanely well and everybody loves all these characters.
Yeah.
But it's like you could just go to the next one could be, this is not a spoiler because I'm not going to say what happens, but definitely stay to the end of the credits.
Oh yeah.
As you would expect from a Marvel movie or, you know, something fun like this, stay to the very end of the credits.
Stay until the ushers say, sir,
you
or
gotta,
ma'am.
You got to go.
Yeah.
The next screening.
I've got to sweep up the huge mess you've made so we can get these next kids in here.
Yeah. Or just try to just stay in the theater until you can watch it again. you know, the way that the thing that gives us at the end, you could go, oh, they could go this way with it. Mm-hmm. Totally different direction. And it still would be I would be completely down for it.
And that's exactly why I want the movie to be wildly successful, because my hope is it makes them a fortune.
And it makes Sony stop trying to make live action, awful live action, like offshoot Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, that they
don't make Kraven, don't make Morbius, don't make Aunt May,
Silver Sable team up movie.
Don't make, or what is this supposed to be? Actually, Black Cat and Silver Sable.
Blech. It's not any better.
Yeah,
yeah. So
it's
I would
not any better.
Just those characters don't have anything to do with each other. But yeah, I would love this to be.
They probably both smooch Spider-Man at some point.
Yeah, and they both have white hair and they're ladies.
Yeah.
And Sony has the rights to them.
Yep.
But I would love to see this make so much money that the Sony executives say, let's just double down on animation and expand this universe and back off the live action stuff.
Now, okay, now that you've said that and we've now I'm seeing the problem too. Is because then the problem here is then anytime Sony executives get involved, that's the problem, is if this makes a ton of money, they're going to go, oh, well, let's crank out a bunch of these and not have the same kind of care and, thoughtfulness.
So
in this
dream scenario,
in this dream scenario, every executive at Sony is fired and, Lord and Miller are allowed to just keep making.
Right. That's the, so, Lord and Miller, that's the writers.
Yeah.
They'd done the Lego movie previously.
They wrote and directed the Lego movie and the Lego Batman movie.
Okay.
Which is possibly...
They're both great.
Possibly the best Batman movie.
It probably is.
I'll say this about that. It's got that same kind of thing where there's like... It's funny throughout the whole thing and it's definitely fun for kids. But there are emotional beats in that. That no live action Batman movie has gotten
right. No other Batman movies tried to touch some of the stuff.
With the exception, I would say, of maybe there's some stuff in Mask of the Phantasm that is on that same kind of. But I mean, there's really like the family aspects of Batman and how it's like for someone who's like supposed to be such a loner, he just keeps creating more and more family. And what he really does, he acts like a loner, but what he really is someone who is desperate to have his family back.
So yeah, in this. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna, so it's like they make that they make a Lego movie that is insanely takes a property that you're like, how do you make a movie out of that? And then finds a way to make a super fun mega hit movie out of it. They make the Lego Batman movie, which is like possibly it's definitely one of the best Batman movies. They make Into the Spider-Verse, which is one of, if not the best Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, I think then, you can safely say it's the best Spider-Man movie.
But then they were going to make a Han Solo movie that they got fired from.
That they were attached to that.
They had shot a bunch of the, you know, that they got fired from for not making, for apparently not being Star Wars-y enough. And it's like, maybe Lord and Miller should have just let them alone and see what they Now, of course, they didn't actually direct Into the Spider-Verse. They were the executive producers and I can't remember if it was Lord or Miller.
Were they writers?
Was one of the writers. He was like, one of them wrote the story and then was co-writer on the screenplay. But they were executive producers and then there was like three or four people were actually the directors. And when you're doing these big animated movies, it's like how Tim Burton gets all the credit for Nightmare Before Christmas because it's his idea and he's the executive producer and he was involved in the story. But Henry Selick is actually the one who directed the stop motion animation because that's the kind of – he's a stop motion animation
director. You probably have to have a certain level of experience with that.
But, I mean, Tim Burton did – I mean, that was one – stop motion animation was a thing that he did in like college and for Disney before he was like a big name person. So he did know how to do that. So I'm sure there was a lot of collaboration, but he's not the
primary
quote unquote
director.
Yeah. But this feels so much like Lord and Miller's style.
Right.
I think that they're obviously
Phil Lord and
I think it's Chris Miller.
Chris Miller. So in my dream scenario, Phil Lord, Chris Miller get to oversee a Marvel animated universe in the same way Kevin Feige oversees the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right.
And they're not going to be able to write and direct every one of these.
Yeah.
But
they could produce all
a
lot of them.
If they could be the creative hand on the wheel.
Yeah.
And Sony executive, kind of, you've got free reign. We're going to We're going to trust you guys here.
I just want Sony executives as far away as possible from any comic stuff.
Right.
You guys can go do whatever you want with Ghostbusters. Hmm. I don't know. Like, I don't even know what else Sony has got a hold of.
I don't either.
Yeah. And I guess I don't really care as long as they don't ruin any of these Spider-Man movies. It's like when Homecoming came out and was very successful. I was like, oh, don't let them mess it up with these sequels.
Right.
And like, you know, we talked about Venom, I think.
We did. We did a Venom.
We did a Venom. you know, and Venom was like, had some fun stuff in it. But it also just kind of felt like everything except Tom Hardy felt like just a generic Sony action spectacle movie.
Very, very generic.
Very generic. Everything but Tom Hardy. He's like the only thing that keeps that movie from just being schlock.
For me personally, Venom failed in the degree that it was disconnected from the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
That I would have loved to see it try to be intentionally more interconnected.
Well, and the thing that stinks about that is that it robs the MCU now of getting to do Venom.
Right.
Which is a bummer.
Yeah, they're definitely not going to be able to introduce him anytime soon until you got to put some space between before you can reboot it. Especially because the movie was just successful enough that they couldn't just be like, let's reboot it in 2 years like they've done for some other things.
Unless they start getting into, like with Spider-Verse, which it did, and I think we're going to see some things sort of like this coming up in Avengers Endgame. And maybe in the next Doctor Strange, the idea of alternate realities where they can go,
we're going to pluck just Venom from this movie.
Or just go, that's that universe's Venom, where there is no Spider-Man.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And then
we can also have our own.
We've got our own Venom.
And they can be mutually exclusive.
Sony won't let that happen. But man.
So, I would love to see Spider-Verse be so successful that Sony then turns around and just doubles down on animation and pulls back some from live action. I think that would be really cool to see. And then, of course, just more of these movies.
Yeah,
More movies with Miles, more movies with Gwen, more movies with other spiders we've not seen. And then maybe even branching out into other parts of the Marvel Universe. But every person should see this movie.
Absolutely. I agree 1,000%. This is a 6-star movie. It's just so good. Something I was kind of wondering about, and I know why they can't really get into any of this in the movie, but why is it just Spider-Man? Like, why are there... So is Captain America around? Is there like a Captain America-verse? Right. Are there unlimited... Because, you know, they do a bunch of things just like they show up in a different universe and they're like, well, this is like my world, but everything's different or everything's a little different. And so I just want, and it's like, we know that one of those is supposed to be kind of like your basic, like 616 Spider-Man, I guess.
Miles is in 1610. I think that's the ultimate universe.
Even though now that is not a thing, you know, it's like, he's in the 616.
Well, now, So, but where he started, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, and that one.
And I want to say that pops up on the screen in the movie that when they're split, showing all the splintering off universes on the web.
They show the numbers?
Yeah, I want to say it says 1610.
I want to just ask if we can go to the theater and watch this movie with like a remote so we can pause things.
Roll it back.
Hey, could you?
You there in the booth?
We just sit there right underneath the window where the projector is. I'm like, hey, stop it real quick. Run that back. I just want to
zoom
like,
in on that top corner then?
Enhance. I'm just like, so if you got Spider-Man, you probably got, where's everybody else? I mean, legally, I know why they couldn't do that in this movie, but why not in the comics? Like, where's everybody else? Because in like Spider-Verse in the comics, seems like a lot of bad stuff is happening. And I'm just, I know it's Spider-Man's thing, so you can't, but do they get into that in the comics at all? It's like, where are the 2,000 different Captain Americas or Iron Mans.
I'm trying to remember.
Iron's men.
In the original Spider-Verse, what...
I didn't even want to reread
the comic. It was a very Spider-Man problem.
Yeah.
So playing off the idea that...
I've got to handle
J. Michael Straczynski introduced in his Spider-Man run that there is something to- totemic, would that be the word? About the spider. It's more than just a science experiment, science fiction.
I cannot tell you how glad I was that this movie had nothing to do with all that nonsense.
I would have, yeah. So agreed, hard agree. But in that, so there's some kind of greater spider spirit or something that Spider-Man's supposed to tap into. It was a lot of mess, honestly, and you don't need to read it or care about it. But
the only thing I would say it's worth reading for is, man, there is some great art in there.
Sure. Yeah.
What's his name?
Olivier. John Romita Jr. was an artist on a lot of that run.
There's like Olivier Coipel, I know, did.
Oh, you're talking about the Spider-Verse.
Yes, yes. I'm talking about
JMS.
No. Yeah. I'm talking about, yeah.
Yeah. So Slott, Dan Slott pulls some of that back. He leaves.
Which is nice, at least, that he using something that someone else, even if it's not a thing that I liked then either.
Right.
But
he pulls some of that out. And also a character that was also introduced in Straczynski's run, Morlun.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
I've always thought it was Morlun.
I think the judges accept both.
Okay.
That he's part of this greater group of villains called the Inheritors, and they're like vampires that feed off these spider totems, and they just travel from universe to universe and do that. So in Spider-Verse, they're going up against these Morlun Inheritors.
Morlun eats Spider-Man's eye in that JMS run.
Yeah.
No, thank you. No, thank you.
You can pass on that.
JMS. This is the thing that drives me crazy. This is like going way back, but I'm sorry to interrupt you on this. I liked Babylon 5, which was the show that JMS was the creator of.
I maybe saw two episodes.
I avoided it for so long. I had a buddy named Peter Hicks who, it was like a year ahead of me in school, and he talked about it so much. He just made it, finally, he wore me down and made it sound. It's like he would keep talking about it. And I go like, wait, now what was it? Who did that? What? he got me to start watching it. And he had like sort of primed the pump on it so well that when I started watching it past the crappy seasons. Like the early seasons where they were trying to figure out what it was going to be and that were not as good. It got better later. So I jumped into it already when it's in the middle of being like all this stuff going on and blah, blah, blah. And I was like,
you're excited to see some of the things he was talking about.
Yeah. And I was like excited when JMS started like coming over to comics. I was like, well, man, Babylon 5 is so good. And he treats, it's like a ton of stuff where it's like, he really seems to care about his characters and blah, blah, blah. I was like, this is going to be neat seeing him writing Spider-Man or whatever. Right. And then it's like, when he did that comic Rising Stars, which I didn't care for because the art was like,
I didn't read it.
I think it was like David Finch or somebody in that. It wasn't David Finch, but it was definitely a David Finch style.
That style.
Yeah. Maybe it was David Finch. I don't think it was, though. Not important. I think it was somebody like with one of those names like Bat with two T's or something. You know what I mean? Remember in the 90s when there's comic creators who were like just one name or something like.
Yeah.
Anyway, none of it. I've not felt like any of his.
He's not my cup of tea. No.
Any of his comic stuff that has been.
His like, Spider-Man run had good moments, but overall his style is just not for me.
Yeah, I didn't like what he did with a bunch of that. Like, obviously his Superman is...
His Superman run is the worst Superman comic you can get your hands on.
I think specifically Earth 1. Superman
also
Earth
not
1.
Grounded. They're both bad.
Grounded's terrible, but there's still like some normal super... But like that emo hoodie wearing Superman who like... So complete... And that's the thing is like, when you hear JMS talking about Superman in interviews... And talking about like why before he was doing any of the stuff, talking about how much he liked Superman, how much he loved like the Christopher Reeve movies and all this stuff, makes you go like, oh, he gets it. He's going to be great. And then to come in and do like just this awful, like, wait, what? What are you doing?
I'm going to do the opposite of all that.
Yeah.
Watch.
It just boggles the mind. Anyway, all of which is to say.
All that to say. So if you go to the comic book store or Comixology or something and pick up Spider-Verse wanting to read the comic event, it's going to be a lot different because they're going up against this race of vampire creatures, the Inheritors, that are specifically targeting spider people. And to answer your question about, man, why don't we see some of these other characters is because it's a uniquely Spider-Man problem. And I think a lot of the action of the story, now it's been a few years since I've read it, but a lot of the action doesn't necessarily take place on our Earth or 616. It's elsewhere in the
multiverse. But they go to a bunch of different Earths where there's different spiders.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the action happens on the Inheritor's home world too. So there's not Captain America, Iron Man, and them, Thor and them to call on. And you've got a whole, you got a team of 20 to 50 Spider-Men. You've got a whole army of Spider-Men.
Spider-Verse, the comic, was not fun.
You don't think so?
Like the movie was.
Oh, no. the movie's, yeah.
Is, and I don't just mean funny. I mean, you have a good time.
Right.
And even though there's parts where it's scary or it, like Spider-Verse, the comic, I felt like it was needlessly dark, like trying too hard. I feel like so often.
Well, definitely when you're killing characters.
Yeah. But it's like, there's, you know, there's death in this movie and it's still, it feels, none of it feels just like.
It's not sensational. It's not for shock value. It's part of the character
pointless.
Development.
Yeah. It's like, it's not like there's just cannon fodder in it.
But to up the stakes in the comic event, you kill a bunch of people early to show, oh, this is a really
oh,
bad
boy.
Dude. This
yeah.
is a serious threat.
And I hate that.
What's Spider-Man going to do now?
I feel like there's so often. Look, now, if you can pull it off, if you can do a really like dark, big superhero thing that's like really dark and scary or feels like really ominous and it's got that feeling, pervasive sense of dread yeah. throughout. If you can pull it off and do it in a way where it like comes out on the other side where it's like, this is awesome, bum, ba, ba, you know, like mm-hmm. things work
if you
out.
Can stick the landing.
If you can stick the landing.
And the middle.
And the yeah, and the beginning. Then it's great. Comics can do that great.
Yeah.
But I feel like so often with these events, it's all just it seems like it's only getting worse with this, yeah. where it's like the whole event is just predicated on, look at how awful this is. Right. Oh, it's the end of everything. Everything, there's no chance. There's no hope. Blah,
yeah, there's
blah.
So few comics events that are actually good. That, I mean, as many as there are, there's so few that you can look back on and say, man, that was just a great story.
Now, like, take Crisis on Infinite Earths.
The original.
Yeah. Crisis on Infinite Earths is very, and maybe that's it's Crisis's fault.
Yeah.
Because it was such a big success and it was worlds live, you know, like the tagline for it was like worlds live, worlds die, you know, nothing will ever be the same or something like that. I can't be expected to remember all this.
Oh, that's pretty close.
It's something like that. I know the worlds live, worlds die is part of it.
Yeah, that's the tagline.
But it was like, wasn't there like another, look, not important. but the, you know, so maybe it's Crisis's fault for because Crisis is bleak.
Infinity minus one planets die. Yeah, or universes
yeah.
die.
Yeah.
You all know, but so, one universe gets
so
wiped
many,
from existence.
But also still like in the midst of all of that, other death and destruction and hopelessness.
Yeah, Barry Allen's sacrifice.
Barry Allen's Supergirl. Sacrifice and Supergirl's death, and which is also kind of like a sacrifice, those still resonate so dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's kind of diminishing returns from there on out.
Now a Flash needs to die in every
crisis is, you know, or it's like, there's, it's just kind of like diminishing returns. And I feel like there's got to be a way to do a big event that feels epic where it's not just about who's going to die in it.
Right.
Like, and that was kind of the thing with this. It was like, there's the worry that if they don't get home, they'll die. But it's not really the point. It's more about, hey, we've got to stop this thing.
Right.
This is
what was the last Marvel or DC event that you really liked?
Then there was 15 minutes of uninterrupted silence. No.
I liked Hickman's Secret Wars.
Which one was that?
That's where Dr. Doom came, like God Doom and,
oh,
and
yeah,
smashed
yeah.
all the realities
Man,
together in the
bad.
Battle world. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Asad Ribic on art.
There was parts of that kind of put me off of it.
Now there was 800 miniseries that went with it, and,
yeah,
and those were
that's
the
problem. It didn't feel
map.
It didn't feel like
the main series. And I thought was really good.
You know what? It's like so the original Secret Wars mm-hmm. or Secret War. What was the original? It's Secret War. Secret Wars.
Secret Wars. I think it's plural.
Oh boy, when they reuse these names
yeah.
over and over.
Well, so Bendis. He had a little mini series called Secret War, which
yeah.
was like this covert ops Boo. Invasion team.
What a, yeah. Anyway. the original Secret Wars was
to sell toys.
Yes. And it seemed big and epic, but it didn't seem like, it wasn't like the, it still, I feel like there was still like a lot of fun to it in that it was like, hey, this is a weird thing we've thrown together, and like, look at how crazy it is. And they're on this other world, and it's
there wasn't crisis level stakes of the universe is destroyed. And it's almost like Hickman took Crisis on Infinite Earths concept and then just married it with Marvel, Secret Wars
and
Battle World concept.
Yeah, that was definitely what it felt like. I remember seeing the first stuff of it when it was like showing a bunch of different versions, and I was like, oh yeah, we've seen this. There was even like a part, one of the covers or something that Alex Ross did that I thought like really looked like a Crisis, like a take on a Crisis cover. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there was stuff I liked about Metal, but it was also like, I had the same problem kind of with Secret Wars, is it's like, it didn't seem focused enough on the story that was trying, it didn't seem like it was just trying to tell that story. It felt like it was trying to set up so many other things, mm-hmm. and with all these miniseries and like part of the story's over here, part of the story's over here. And it's not that you can't do like those. I don't necessarily want the individual books to just ignore this huge thing that's supposed to be happening, but it's also kind of a lot to ask all of a sudden your entire publishing slate to ignore what they've been doing and go, hey, whatever you were working on for the next 3 months, forget that.
So not only is this event mediocre, now you've also messed over 40 other people's stories.
Yeah. If not more than that, you know, of like all these different, like, other things that they were working on for the last, I feel like comics need to just focus more on being good and less on, I know that these events are always like a
boost. Money makers for them.
Yeah. They're a boost to the bottom line, but I think that they are at the point now and have been for a while where they keep coming at the cost of the quality of the 200 other books you put out. And it's like, yeah, you're making this one book sell a lot, but
if you were able to leave the other books alone and see them build a following, and would it balance out maybe?
Yeah. And what, I mean, of course that requires patience,
and you have a more quality product that's going to make you more money on bookshelves for years
to come.
And
it's kind of like that thing of where, you know, people, and I fall into this sometimes too, I know, where I'm not reading stuff because I'm like, oh, that's not important. It's like, it's not really about what's going on in the whole universe. So I don't have to be in any kind of hurry to read it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm very often in this position of, because I'm reading, so we're coming up on the end of 2018, seeing people's best of lists, that kind of thing. And this happens every year where I realize there's a lot of stuff on that list I'm not reading or haven't read.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I feel like I'm not reading some of the best comics because I'm having to keep up with the big two's mainline stuff.
Yeah, but it's like, it's like self-perpetuating or something, because it's like you don't pay attention to the, also then like with Secret Wars, it was like, oh, and then when Secret Wars is over, all the books are canceled and we're starting everything over.
Right.
So it's like, so, and when you know that that kind of stuff is like always just could be on the horizon anywhere, it makes you start going like, why am I reading this? They're just going to reboot it again in 2 months, you know, or in 6 months or whatever.
Or before the story's over, which was the case with Secret Wars.
Yeah. You know, there's like, there's all this stuff where you're just going like, and like one holdup in the big thing could mess up the publishing slate mm-hmm. for everything else. And it's just like, it's tough. I mean, and it's going to be tough to, I think that if comics are going to really continue to live and thrive, you have to get away from this model of keep doing these big events. I think you've got to increase the quality of and publish more good books and not just publish more books. Like, publish.
And if you don't have a good idea,
don't make
for a story or a character, man, there doesn't have to be a blank book on the shelf every single month. There just doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
Just wait. Just wait until you got something good.
But then this, you know, and we talked about this. So it's that thing of where people are going like, oh, it's just some miniseries. It's not important. It doesn't quote in as big a air quotes as I can make. It doesn't matter because it's not part of like the big thing that's going on or whatever.
But what matters is your time.
Yes.
That you're going to spend the minutes of your life or hours that you're going to waste reading a crappy book.
Yeah, just because it's part of, it's like, you know, there's so many books where they're like, yeah, it's up to issue 600 and whatever. And it's like, how many of those are actually good? And how many of those are just, we've got to put something out.
Right.
Whereas when you get stuff where it's like, you know, like I think of, I use Dragon Ball for an example. He told his story in Dragon Ball and then it was done. you know, I assume he went to do other stuff, you know, and then I may be getting the timeline on this wrong. I don't know. I'm not a expert on Dragon Ball or anything, but I know that Dragon Ball stopped
from the book,
the actual comic.
Yeah.
You know, it was coming out in Shonen Jump or whatever weekly. Mm-hmm. But it's like, he told his story and it was like about a kid who's got a monkey tail and he fights and they're looking, it's a fun adventure. They're looking for these seven Dragon Balls.
Right.
And the kid kind of, there's fights and they go to they get into like a fight tournament, you know, and stuff happens and they find the Dragon Balls and whatever, you know, and they have adventures and it's a kid and he grows up some and he gets a girlfriend, whatever, you know, he makes friends, he makes enemies, blah, 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 and then it's over. And then he has later, he's like, okay, I want to go back to that. But it's like however many years later, and now he's married with a kid.
Right.
And here's where these other characters were, and it's Dragon Ball Z. And then he tells that story, which is here's where this guy came from.
Imagine if they felt the need that they kept having to reboot to the status quo of him being that kid again over and over, yeah, and over again. And you never got Dragon Ball Z and whatever came after it.
Yeah. You know, or with, I think that's what's like a really cool thing about like with, it seems like with manga, people follow creators way more than just characters. Now, it's not to say that there aren't like super popular characters and everything, mm-hmm, and stuff, but and we've actually got a question sort of about some of this that we'll get to in a minute. But the idea that you just go like, oh, I like what this guy does, let me go see what he does next, and not so much about, and I don't want, I mean, but obviously they keep doing stuff with Dragon Ball, so it's like, it's not like they just completely get rid of that.
Sure.
But the idea that you could go, hey, let's just give this a rest until we've got something really good, until someone's...
I love it, yeah. Like, my feelings would not be hurt. As much as I love, I mean, you name it, character, even Spider-Man. If Marvel's like, we're just gonna wait 2 months on, we got a good story in the works, but we don't have one for this month. So just keep your $4 this month. Fine. I'm so behind. So behind on comics anyway.
Well, I mean, and
that's,
I assume,
totally fine. I won't even notice, honestly.
I mean, I assume part of this is because, you know, comics are like holding up a network of comic stores.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, Spider-Man, if I don't have that reliable $4 from X number of people every month from Spider-Man, we can't keep the lights on.
Yeah.
But it's like also, well, what if everything was just better so more people were reading comics and it was like they weren't as expensive, they didn't have to be as expensive because you were selling more of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just there's got to be a better way. Not like we're going to crack it. I don't think we're going to crack it today, but.
So all that to say,
Into the Spider-Verse.
Into the Spider-Verse was probably more fun. You're not going to find that exact same story in a comic. I'm happy they pulled more from that Spider-Man 2 plot than the actual Spider-Verse,
yeah,
comic, because that would have been real bleak to have vampires going around.
Though, that being said, I think that this team could do something with those characters.
In a sequel or something.
In a sequel or something. Or yeah. It's like, that's the thing is, like, a lot of times when you have these people where we're like, oh, that story sucks. It's the problem is not the like the plot or the premise. It's how it's handled.
So in the hands of the right creators.
In the hands, and it's like when I said, you know, like with the MCU stuff, I'm kind of like, yeah, whatever they want to do, I'm down for it.
They'd be good
because they have proven themselves time and time again that they have, like, they're not just making dumb decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm kind of like, yeah, okay, whatever you guys want to do, I'm down for now. You've proved yourself, and I feel the same way kind of about. If they were like, hey, Lord and Miller are going to do a Lego. Well, that was like the thing. I think at one point they were attached to do The Flash.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, and The Flash has gone through like five directors now. I don't know if that movie's ever even going to come out. And I don't know if I ever even want it to.
Yeah, even if it did.
I don't know that version of The Flash is what I want to see. I'm curious about, oh man, Aquaman's coming out like...
Week and a half.
What? When's it coming out?
I think weekend after this one. 20-something? 20th? 21st?
Okay. I was thinking it came out maybe like on the 15th, which would be this weekend, but that's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Okay.
For everybody else.
For everybody else. Not us.
I'm definitely going to have my family there.
Well, I think we could go to a early screening of Aquaman if you're interested.
Yeah.
I think we might have an in on an early screening of Aquaman, but I can't imagine that will be quite as well received. Who knows? I heard it's getting some.
Generally positive. I expect it to probably be better than some of the other.
Than something stuff. Directed by Zack Snyder?
Oh boy.
Doobly. anyway, so I think our big takeaway is definitely go see Spider-Verse.
Go see it.
It was so
take
good.
Take your friends, your family.
I'm so proud
your
of
neighbors.
Us. Yeah, get everyone you can. I was so excited to see it. I took everybody that I could get to go to it that I thought would be into seeing it. Well, and even April, who I did not, she was not, I don't know if she's going to like this or not, but I wanted her to go.
Yeah.
And boy, am I glad I took
her. I'm taking
her.
My family this weekend. I know they're going to love it.
Yeah. Yeah, so go see it. I'm very proud of us, though, for not, I don't think we have given too much of the plot away. We haven't talked too much about any of the specifics of the stuff. And we didn't spoil, I don't think we spoiled that much.
No.
I could sit here, I mean, really, we could sit here, though, and just go through the
this
plot.
This moment was great. That moment was great.
Yeah, we could go through just beat by beat on the movie and talk about how great it was. But I really, on the chance that you're still listening to this and haven't seen the movie yet, go see the movie. And then maybe we'll do a follow-up episode. Probably not, though. I don't know. Maybe. It'd be weird to go like, okay, now that we know everyone has seen it, it's made $1 billion already. We know everyone's seen it. Now let's just go through scene by scene.
Your exhaustive commentary.
So let's answer some Twitter questions.
Let's do it.
At Lightning Armor asks, are you guys familiar with One Punch Man and or My Hero Academia? If so, what do you think about the Japanese approach to the superhero genre versus the traditional North American style of superhero fiction?
I've had both of those recommended to me, and sadly, I've not seen either of them.
One Punch Man is one of the best things I can in recent memory. It is so good. I haven't read the manga. I'm just going off the anime, but their take on it, definitely. I've started watching My Hero Academia and I liked it. But I just, it's one of those things I just, for whatever reason, I haven't like really sat down and like tried to get through a bunch of it. But with My Hero Academia, I started reading the comic, first and enjoyed that. And I feel like the anime is a good adaptation so far of what I've seen. One Punch Man has a moment that is it's in the last episode of the first season. There is a moment in that is, I think, one of the most satisfying moments in any creative thing I have ever seen or read. Or it's, man, I love One Punch Man. And also, the theme song for One Punch Man has got to be one of the best things ever.
Well, where can a person find One Punch Man?
One Punch Man is, last time I checked, it's on Netflix.
Netflix, okay.
I've got it on Blu-ray if you want to borrow it.
Okay.
If it's not still on Netflix.
Yeah, we've got Netflix recently got Hulu, and yeah, I remember seeing it, but I couldn't remember where.
The last time I checked, it was still, that was where I watched it to begin with. And then I was like, this is so good. I have to buy this because I don't want to ever not be able to see this.
My brother recommended One Punch Man, and he doesn't recommend anything. Like, he's not that kind of person. So when he said it, I'm like, man, this must be something.
One Punch Man is just incredible. And it's such a fun take on superheroes and like superhero tropes. It's definitely a thing that's like a real kind of love letter. And it was so awesome because obviously, do you know the premise of One Punch Man?
Just in the title that he can take down anybody with one punch.
One punch is all it takes.
But then from that, yeah, they play out with a lot of other tropes.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. But it's like he's so powerful. Being a superhero is boring. Mm-hmm. He's just kind of going like, oh, great. I thought this guy was going to be a challenge, but it's just, okay, I'm going to go back to, I've got my shopping list. I took care of this guy. Let me go.
With my one punch.
Yeah. And somebody, there was one day, so the idea is that, like, the premise of the story is that he is so powerful that it's like, there's nothing as a challenge as far as fighting goes. Because, of course, because it's Japanese, everything is about the fight.
Sure.
You know, it's like, but it was so great because the existence of One Punch Man and how good it is allowed me to completely shut down with one punch, metaphorically, someone who was trying to say that Superman is boring because he's so powerful. I was having a conversation with someone about comics and stuff and whatever. And this is a person who I knew loved One Punch Man and who then was saying something about how, and we were talking about Superman and just comic stuff. And they're like, Superman's boring. He's just like, so he can do anything, whatever. And I was like, you love One Punch Man. His whole bit is that he's so powerful, nothing's a challenge. And it was like, what you're really saying is, I haven't read any Superman comics. Oh boy, that felt good. But it also, I mean, as much as it felt good, it did also, I think it really did sort of flip that switch for this person who's like, oh, wait, yeah, you're right. So not very superheroic of me to be like, you idiot. Like, you like One Punch Man. How dare you? But yeah, One Punch Man is absolutely great.
Shouldn't have come for Superman.
Yeah. I never would have said that. Start coming for Superman. I gotta get the knives out. Think they definitely have a totally different spin on it. And it would be easier for us to talk about it if you had seen it. Maybe we should watch some of that. I would be totally down to do like a rewatch.
How many episodes?
One Punch Man is only like 12 episodes.
Oh, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. And they're all great. And man, talk about a thing. Also, like with Into the Spider-Verse, does a great job of like having this interesting crew of characters. And you start caring about everybody with like, it's also really deftly handled the way that they make you care about these. There's a guy whose name is, what's his name? Shoot. I can't think of his name.
Okay.
He rides a bicycle. His whole thing is, it's a real big thing. And I think this is a thing in My Hero Academia too, where it's really about tiers of like in One Punch Man, there's like a Justice League, but it's like run by the government and it's characters are in different classes of care of hero. Like this guy who rides a bicycle is like a level C hero or something, which is like your real, like doesn't really have any powers. He just rides a bike and he's trying hard, you know, but there's people who like him.
Yeah.
There are people who are like, oh, hey, like you would. And you know, it's like when there's a basketball player that's on your local team, you're like, oh man, I love Mike Conley, you know, and Mike Conley's not like he's not like Michael Jordan. It's not like people all over the country.
If you dropped his name in another big city, they might not.
They might not. Yeah. But it's like, but you're like, oh, Mike Conley. Yeah. Get him, Mike Conley. And then Mike Conley is a Memphis Grizzlies player. For those of you that don't know, he's like our team captain,
yeah.
You know, and he's great, but he's not like a league all-star total, like superstar known. He's not LeBron.
Right.
You know, like, you know, that's a guy who everybody knows. He'd be like a level S hero where he's like the top of the, you know, whatever. And then Mike Conley's whatever. But then they make you care about this guy whose just thing is he rides a bicycle and he's trying, you know, it's really good. And I think that's a thing that a lot of Japanese comics do better than American stuff sometimes is like filling out a roster with like, here's the main guy. Okay, and now here's his friend.
Giving you a supporting cast.
Yeah, and where you're really kind of interested in all of their stuff. Whereas a lot of time, like in Superman books, I'm like, I don't care about what's going on with Jimmy. I don't care about this other reporter, what they're doing. Like, give me Superman.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway. At Brand Med asks, with Disney doing live action remakes of all their animated movies, what's a classic live action movie you'd like to see redone in animation? Thoughtful look from Matt. He's got a
live action
that we want to see done animated.
Because my brain immediately went to the what haven't they still done? But that's not the question. It's a famous live action.
It's the inverse.
Yeah,
a classic live action
like a
movie.
Mary Poppins, but animated.
yeah,
that kind of thing.
I don't think it even has to necessarily be like a Disney.
He's just saying the way Disney's been doing that.
Yes.
Okay. So any great, like, so you could do the Goonies animated.
Yeah.
Huh. Your Predator.
Yeah.
Let's just we'll just steer clear of superhero stuff. Maybe.
Maybe. I would love to see a good animated Superman movie. Like a big budget, like
the Spider-Verse movie, but with Superman.
Yeah. I would like to see Lord Miller. Well, and they're doing Batman, Lego Batman 2.
They're overseeing the...
Or direct, or whatever. Yeah. I mean, I know they're involved, whatever the situation is. And they're also doing the Lego movie 2.
Right. That's coming out for beginning of next year, right? In the spring. Live action classic, but animated. I'm having trouble.
Yeah, I mean, you could go, it's sort of so broad. There's like so many different places you could go with it. To me, I would want it to be something that, a movie that could genuinely benefit from an animated treatment, not just doing it to do it. Something where you could pull stuff off in it that you couldn't, either they couldn't at the time,
right,
or that it just is harder to buy in live action. But that's tough. Mm. I mean, there are literally there's a bajillion movies that I could say that where I would love to see it.
What about animated Indiana Jones?
I thought of that, but I'm like, that was one of the first ones that came to my mind because I was like, it's older, but that movie all works. You don't need an animated version of it. That's true. There's nothing in it that
it could elevate. Yeah. Unless it was a new, unique story.
Yeah.
Not a remake of Raiders or something.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, I would rather see them go that direction with Indiana Jones than keep trotting Harrison Ford out and he's like 80.
And are they doing a number five?
Supposedly. But I also kind of don't want to see them just go, all right, here's the new Indiana Jones. And it's Chris Pratt or whoever.
So animation would be maybe a good solution to that because you could just keep him forever young as an animated character.
But also, I'm kind of like, do we need to keep... There's some stuff I'm like, hey, we don't have to keep making more of these. Because it's like, especially if like the chance is like it's bad. And then you sort of like go, all the Indiana Jones movies are good. Most of the Indiana Jones movies are good.
Yeah.
A couple of the Indiana Jones movies are good. It just becomes a thing where I'm like, maybe this is tough.
Yeah.
This is a good question, Brandon.
Because it's not like Ferris Bueller's Day Off is elevated by being animated. It's like you need a specific story that...
Something that needs, that could benefit from it being animated. And the first thing that came to my mind was Ghostbusters. But...
It's been it. Well, I mean, not like a feature length.
But I mean, like, but I'm doing straight up remake, just like with this Lion King and Aladdin, where it's like you're basically remaking them. Just you are
shot for shot, just about.
Well, yeah. I mean, but like you're telling the same story, and it's like, yeah, there's some stuff you could up with this, but it's like Ghostbusters is fine. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in there that needs that. Oh, we just couldn't. It doesn't work because we couldn't pull this off, and it's like. No, it's all fine.
Right, because Disney's doing these because they did work and they think there's more money to be made.
Yeah, I'm wanting to like just go like start looking around like all my movies and seeing like what... I started thinking of
Labyrinth.
Is there anything that Labyrinth needs? It's all... It feels magical already. Like the movie... That movie feels like it's got the movie magic. You know, like...
I think that's the problem because these classic movies are classic because they did it well. They don't need to be.
When I thought about something like Jaws, where part of the problem was with that, when they were making that movie, was they were hindered by the limitations of the shark didn't work. But then that all worked out for the best.
Yeah.
And then you see what happens with some of these where it's like, oh, now we can do it. And it's, you know, the Meg or something. And it's like, yeah, we don't need that. And it's already basically an animated movie because the shark's fake.
True.
It's a cartoon. It's a real-looking cartoon.
Our modern-day live-action, in air quotes, movies are animated movies.
Yeah,
Infinity War was like a 98% animated movie.
Well, that people are calling this new Lion King live-action.
Right.
It's like, there's no lions in this movie. Yeah. This is all computer animated. I mean, maybe you got some...
Location shots or something.
Yeah, like, what are you talking about, live-action?
It's not live-action in the same way that like Cinderella and Beauty and the Beast, where they've got human actors on there.
I had forgotten they even did a Cinderella.
It was good.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right.
I've got little girls.
Okay.
But
Fair enough.
It was decent. Yeah.
Because I heard the Beauty and the Beast one was like so pointless.
It was pointless because it was just about a shot-for-shot remake, whereas the Cinderella, it was
a like shot-for-shot remake, but uglier.
Well, I don't know. I mean, some stuff was good. Anyway, I think Cinderella was better than Beauty and the Beast as far as a remake or retelling.
I did not even see Beauty and the Beast because April loves Beauty and the Beast. And then she saw it and was like kind of excited to see it and saw it and was like...
She was disappointed by it.
Yeah, she was like, this is so pointless. And I mean, I think she actively thought it was terrible.
Yeah.
In that it was just like, let's not get into this. we're getting away from the question.
Okay.
I feel like I have to run into the other room and really start looking through some of my movies to think of, man, I don't know. I know we're going to think of some ideas for this later. So let's just, we'll put a pin in this and come up and try to come up with Brandon. This is a great question though. I'm sorry we don't have like an immediate answer. Just like everything I think of, or I started trying to think of like horror movies that I would like to see where it's like they were really hindered by some of the limitations of the special effects. And then you could do it like that.
Yeah.
And that would be an interesting, weird thing to go like, ooh, this R-rated animated movie that, but not for being not R-rated like Sausage Party or something where it's just for, oh, they're cussing.
Right.
You know, or it's like really the movie has to be R because of the, you know, special effects or whatever. I don't know. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's a horror. But man, yeah, I can't think of anything. So anyway, let's see. At Lightning Armor asks, best Spider-Man costume of all time.
Are we like maybe other than the original?
Well, I guess you can take it however you want.
Yeah. I'm going to say the original is not an option because I think.
But which original? Because see, that's like you could. Yeah. I mean, you could be saying like the original, but you're like, but specifically, what I mean is like Eric Larson's take on it, or you know, or John Romita Sr.'s take on it,
right.
Or
yeah,
because there's a lot of play in that. When even the first Amazing Fantasy 15,
it's changed a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have the underarm webs or do you not?
Yeah,
but
I think I will answer this. I'll say
no,
I
you think, go first.
I think my current favorite Spider-Man costume. I don't know if I can say best. This would be a much longer think that we don't have time to record. Right. But I would say that my favorite Spider-Man costume currently is probably the Homecoming suit.
Okay.
The fancy. The one that looks like Spider-Man.
Right.
I feel like that's the best sort of on-screen representation of a movie version of a Spider-Man costume. Mm-hmm. I was never crazy about the Tobey Maguire one. I mean, it was fine, but I didn't like the... there was just something about it that was a little bit... never completely worked for me. Mm-hmm. And goodness, same deal with the Andrew Garfield ones. The one in the second movie was a little better at least, but it just looked more like the... it kind of just looked more like the Tobey Maguire one.
Right.
And also, man, do I hate it in superhero movies when a character's costume changes and there's like no explanation for it.
Yeah, no reason why.
No reason.
Or that they have a costume at all and...
no explanation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And or it's like, you know, in that first Amazing Spider-Man, the way that they sort of try to have a scene where he makes a suit of some kind and it goes from like... that's what I hate is... in all of the Spider-Man movies, except for Homecoming, he goes from a crappy homemade suit into a big budget Hollywood movie level costume.
And just a screen change. Yeah.
And just a screen. Yeah. It's like, he goes from that to that. And it's like,
they have Tobey Maguire sketching in his sketch pad. And then all of a sudden it's
fully like, how did you make, like you, your last costume was like a sweatshirt with a sock on your head. And then you go to this thing with like raised webbing and like all this detail. And it's like
Homecoming's perfect because you can just have Stark give it to him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And but it does that thing where he does have a crappy homemade costume that a 15-year-old would make. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, yeah, we want to get him into a real Spider-Man suit though. Mm-hmm. So here you go. Perfect.
So I think when I say original from the comics,
what picture pops in your head?
I picture Mark Bagley or John Romita Jr. because just exposure to it.
Yeah.
Their take on the classic red and blue. I love the black costume, the symbiote costumes, iconic, really great design. I think it's endured as a lot of people's favorites because it's just such a good design. I think the man, I like them all so much. I think I think it's in my mind because of the Spider-Man game.
I was going to say,
you get so many of them and, yeah. Into the Spider-Verse, you see so many of them that I feel like I've got so many to choose from. Scarlet Spider, as silly as it is, will always have a space in my heart.
Because, I love it.
Because I go right back to being a...
I hated the Clone Saga. Even when it was happening, I hated the Clone Saga. But I will never not love that Scarlet Spider costume.
It's so silly, but
it works. Yeah.
He's got an ankle belt with a pouch, and he's just head to toe red with like a blue hoodie pulled over the arms cut off, but it just works.
And we've talked about it before, but I love the PS4 Spider-Man suit.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name of it in the game?
If you hadn't asked,
it's one of my all-time favorites now.
Yeah, it does have a name. I just can't think of it.
Yeah, it's not important. Anyway, we'll answer some more of these questions. We've got to wrap up. We'll answer some more questions in the next episode. We still got all your questions. Thank you so much.
Good move ending on a Spider-Man question, though.
Yeah, right? Right? I think about these things sometimes. It's almost the end of the show. Thank you, everyone who sent in questions. Please continue to do so. You can tweet us or email questions that you want us to talk about, even when we're not
sure
actively recording, and we'll try to get to everything. Keep it close to me, podcast@gmail.com, at KICTM podcast on Twitter, at the Chris Haley, at XA Matt Drain. Go to keepitclosetome.com for all the show notes. The show is on Patreon, patreon.com/thechrishaley. Get the episodes early, get to see other stuff. I'm working on some cool things that hopefully I will be able to start putting up soon that will eventually be on the regular internet as well, but just fun stuff I really hesitate to call it behind the scenes stuff, because that makes it seem like a little bit more too self-important. It's just like, whatever, but check that stuff out. If you want, thank you so much to everyone who does. Gracious. Is there anything else you want to tell people, Matt, or plug? No. Or
go see Spider-Verse. I don't want to hear your excuses. Go see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I completely agree. And I'll just leave you with this.
Honestly, even what did we talk about last time?
I don't know. I started editing it last night, and I still haven't gotten to the part where the show actually starts.